Welcome to Galacticast, Twerpcast episode 24. We stand between the shadow and the light. We are humanity's last best hope. Today we will discuss Battlestar Galactica. I would like to introduce you to the human silent prototype, James Caswell!
And he's Doug Zeitlin, number 4,326, in line to try and get 6 Pregos. Now serving number 212.
As we record this Twerpcast, it is March 2009. Sci-Fi Channel has just broadcast the series finale of the Battlestar Galactica Reimagination. This is a pretty good time for us to discuss the history of Battlestar Galactica.
Battlestar Galactica was initially launched in 1978. Produced by Glenn Larson, it aired on ABC for one season from 1978 to 1979. It starred Lauren Green, at that time best known for his lead role as Paw on Bonanza, and a couple of fairly new faces known as Richard Hatch and Dirk Benedict. That's Richard Hatch, the actor, not Richard Hatch, the Survivor contestant. In spite of its short life, it did build up a cult following, and it spawned multiple books, several of which were written by Richard Hatch himself. After the show was canceled, the first 3 episodes were turned into a motion picture and released overseas in the wake and popularity of Star Trek the Motion Picture.
There was some controversy over the fact that some of the concepts and themes may have been stolen from the Star Wars movie. The lawsuit was eventually thrown out of court without base. Despite the show having been canceled, there was a fan following. There was the now infamous write-in campaign. So the network decided they would give it another shot in 1980, and they would completely retool the show. They decided to eliminate all of the extraneous characters, cutting out the salaries of literally 3/4 of the staff. When it came time to actually do casting, neither Dirk Benedict nor Richard Hatch was available. So the original intention had been to set this show 3 years in the future. They set it 30 years in the future, Adama being the only character from the original show to hold over. They promoted Lieutenant Boomer to Colonel Boomer, and they added new characters.
What you're telling us is that the shot that ABC gave it was to the head or to the chest?
I think quite possibly in this order. To the testicles, to the chest, and then to the head.
In addition to bringing back Lauren Green and Boomer, they also decided that the really obnoxious adopted son of Apollo would be brought back as an adult Viper pilot named Troy. Out of all of the characters that they could have possibly have brought back to the series, they had to bring back Boxy?
Well, this was the show of bad intentions. The original concept, actually, was to have the Viper pilots traveling around through time, kind of setting history right as once went wrong.
Gee, that sounds familiar from someplace.
Well, there's a reason for that, because ABC said, no, you can't do it. You've got to set it in modern day. We're going to save money. You're setting it in modern day, and all the episodes are going to happen with existing sets. So Donald Belisarius kept his idea in the background and produced a few years later a little show you might have heard of called Quantum Leap. Most people don't consider Galactica 1980 part of the canon. It has so little to do with the original series that even if you keep it in canon, it doesn't affect anything.
I think that it's still in canon for the updated Battlestar Galactica, and that was the Earth that they arrived at that was completely eradicated.
I like that concept. But having it still in canon actually is kind of important to what came next. That fan following and the cult fanfare has continued now since 1978, so we've got nearly 30 years of fans based on a single season of Battlestar Galactica and 10 episodes of Galactica 1980. We've got 30 years of fanfare for this show that lasted such a short period of time. Original actors from the series, like Richard Hatch, started to notice something. Little science fiction shows like Star Trek have been brought back with new life. Little movies like Star Wars that had the prequels. And he gets this idea, we can capitalize on this. I'm not trying to say anything bad about Richard Hatch, because he's right. It has the fan holding and a really good potential. So he comes with this idea of Battlestar Galactica The Second Coming. This was a project that was intended to pick up where the original series ended in 1978. It would completely ignore Galactica 1980.
Which people were already fine with.
Pretty much nobody watched it anyway, so it's really not going to affect anybody. And he filmed essentially a pilot episode, funding this completely on his own. He mortgaged his house, he maxed out his credit cards. He did this in 1998 and 1999 and created a little pilot film about 30 minutes long. He was trying to convince Universal Studios to finance it and greenlight a new project based on this. The film was co-directed by Jay Wolfell and produced by Johnny J. Young. Unfortunately, it didn't really go anywhere, and it's only been seen outside of the production crew at one science fiction convention. Based on this telefilm, he did create a 4-minute trailer that he does go around to various conventions and show to people.
And when the networks didn't pick this up, he used the same basic principle to start writing his novels.
Yeah, essentially he was using his script ideas to turn them into individual novels. For what it's worth, they're not terrible. They're not great. They're not the American novel. They're not great works of science fiction, but they're little fun stories.
And as far as it goes, he does give some lip service even to Galactica 1980 in that Apollo's adopted son is a Viper pilot now, and he was actually the first one to come up with the concept of there being a female version of Starbuck in that Starbuck had a daughter.
I like the character of Dylan, who may or may not be the basis of Kara Thrace. One of the things that really hurt Richard Hatch's effort is at the same time he was trying to sell a Battlestar Galactica concept, Glenn Larson was trying to do a movie. He had this idea for a Battlestar Galactica feature film centered around the Battlestar Pegasus after its appearance on the TV show, but consistent with the mythology including Battlestar Galactica 1980.
We've often referred to the practice of beating a dead horse.
Well, we'll just say that I'm glad that didn't happen. But that wasn't the end for Battlestar Galactica. Just because Richard Hatch and Glenn Larson had a little fight didn't mean that the core concept of bringing back these characters in this universe isn't a profitable venture.
In 2001, another version of Battlestar Galactica was launched. Bryan Singer, best known as the director of X-Men and Superman Returns, along with Tom DeSanto, were asked to relaunch Battlestar Galactica as a TV series by both USA and Fox Networks. It would have been yet another attempt to continue the original series. It was going to be set 20 years after the original Battlestar Galactica, where the humans had decided to abandon their search for Earth and set up a home for themselves in an asteroid field, calling it New Caprica. Again, a fairly familiar-sounding concept. They had gotten decadent and obsessed with glitz and pleasure, and then the Cylons show up again and attack. At the end of the pilot, it would have taken you for a surprise ending to the planet Cylon, where we would have discovered that Apollo was a Cylon human half-breed, kind of like the Borg on Star Trek The Next Generation, and was now leading the Cylons. It was going to be up to Apollo's son to rescue him, return his humanity, and save him from the dark side. I mean, save him from being a Cylon.
And there was quite a bit of work done on this. If you look on the internet, you can see production stills, there's video animations of the Cylon from the 2001 show, and this probably would have happened. Unfortunately, there was a little event in America on September 11th. Due to the delays that happened everywhere in the country, when production was ready to start, Bryan Singer was forced to choose between directing X-Men 2 or continuing his work with Battlestar Galactica. He chose X-Men 2. With the loss of him on the project, Fox Network pulled out of the deal, and USA chose to invest their interest in another little science fiction project called Firefly. Although the pre-production was very thoroughly invested, it was ultimately abandoned.
Which is a really good lesson. Just because you hear that something is in pre-production doesn't mean it's going to become a movie or a TV show. It just means it's a thought in somebody's head and they're following through on it. It might not make it to either screen.
Now you'd think, after so many abortive efforts, that this would be it for Battlestar Galactica. But not so much. USA formed a new creative team consisting of Ronald D. Moore from Star Trek fame and David Icke to develop a new concept for this series. The result of this was the Battlestar Galactica miniseries in 2003, which was developed all along as a backdoor pilot for a Battlestar Galactica series in 2004.
Rather than picking up where the original series left off, they decided, okay, we're just going to completely reimagine this, start from scratch, we're going to use the original as a template, but we're going to feel free to color way outside the lines whenever we feel like.
Battlestar Galactica 2004 TV series starred the Emmy Award-winning and Oscar-nominated Edward James Olmos, Oscar-nominated Mary MacDonald, and garnered a wide range of critical acclaim, including Emmy nominations for its creative work, its writing, and its directing.
It also earned a great deal of fan criticism right from the very beginning, with the casting of a female Starbuck and a female Boomer.
Not to lessen the impact that Boomer turned out to be a Cylon.
If you thought that they were upset before the show ever aired, boy, were they fuming after that last 5-minute cliffhanger where it was revealed that Boomer was a Cylon. Lesson number 2. Don't start flaming things that you haven't seen yet. You'd never know how good it's going to be until you've actually seen it.
Having watched the miniseries, I thought in its own little universe, it was okay. Frankly, I still enjoyed the original better. The original was more lighthearted, more witty, just a more fun concept. But the choice of the producers of the reimagined Battlestar was it was going to be your gritty, your darker, your more reality-based type show. The 2004 new reimagined series ended in March of 2009. That's not the end of the reimagined Battlestar Galactica, that's just the end of the series. This gives us the time to just kind of discuss our thoughts on the series.
I was not as diehard attached to the original series as some people that I know. As such, I felt as though I was better prepared to enjoy the relaunch. I had no problem with a female Starbuck. In fact, I got rather upset with the people that were yelling and screaming and hollering about a female Starbuck because they were flaming her, her character, her as an actress, before they ever saw one frame of film. And that always upsets me when people use this wonderful thing that we call the internet to blast other people.
As somebody with a journalism background, what I've always been upset with modern journalism and the advent of the internet blogging is in the absence of actual news and actual facts, opinions are taken as fact. And just saying you don't like something because you don't like it isn't news. It's not.
It's not news. It's not even reviewing. It's simply your opinion and should be treated as such. We make no ifs, ands, or buts about the fact that this show is our opinion. We try to present as many facts as possible. We try to give you good explanations as to why we feel the way we feel about things. But it's still our opinion.
I think we digress a little bit, but this is really a good discussion on the low points. And this pre-initial fan reaction, we're not going to watch it because it doesn't continue the original story, or we're not going to watch it because you've changed the gender of some of the characters. It was among the low points that Battlestar Galactica has had. Honestly, in watching that first half a season of Battlestar Galactica, it was really pretty bad. The show itself gets a lot of critical acclaim, the writing people love, the acting people love, but the stories were just so incredibly painful. I remember reading the producer comments that this is not a science fiction show, this is a drama that happens in outer space. And it was not a drama, it was bad melodrama.
I will agree that there were some episodes that were almost painful to watch. One of the very first episodes, 33, was not very well thought out. It was, as Doug said, painful to watch because they were trying to show the stress and the strain and the pain that these people were under, and all it showed was that they had a lack of forethought and couldn't put two steps in front of the other to make headway. It wasn't well thought out. Now, fortunately, the show did improve. I thought that the miniseries was very well done. Then it went into the first half of its first season, and it almost felt like the show stumbled right out of the starting blocks. But I did feel as though they got their feet back underneath them, and as of the second part of the first season, it really took off, and they started doing some decent storytelling.
By the time that the Pegasus shows up and you have the conflict between Admiral Kane and the rest of the fleet, they're actually starting to show both some of the science fiction aspects of the story and some of the drama aspects, and they're putting them together very well at this time. And I think that the show still had ups and downs all throughout the show, honestly. A lot of what went on in New Caprica could have been reduced to like an episode or two. A lot of what happened when they got to Earth in season 4 could have been reduced to an episode or two. They had these concepts and they were drawn out a little bit too long. And this is a spoiler for the series finale, but there are other places where they introduce the concept and don't finish it. What happened to Kara Thrace? What was Kara Thrace that returned from death? Here's a concept that they touched in only a couple episodes and they just left you hanging at the end.
The season finale did do a decent job of tying up probably 90% of the questions that were left hanging through the series. We finally discover what the mass hallucination was between President Roslin, Athena, Six, Gaius Baltar, and Athena's child at the Opera House. It took 3 seasons of them building up to this point for them to finally explain it, but we finally got an answer, and as it was starting, I went, oh, that's what they've been leading up to. But there were questions that were left unanswered, and I know that they did it on purpose so that the audience could fill in the blank on their own. I do feel, though, that the series finale did have some good tie-ups for several of the characters. Seeing Gaius Baltar finally get around to redeeming himself was a nice touch. The conclusion of the Adama-Roslyn love affair was very bittersweet.
And here is where I am just amazed. From a story that I've said for 4 years, especially that episode 33, which I absolutely hated and think is, in science fiction terms, among the worst I've ever seen. I mean, it's right up there with Highlander, The Source, and the Flash Gordon television series being that bad. The series finale of the Battlestar Galactica is the complete polar opposite. This is what I see the show should have been, what their intent was from the start. An absolutely fantastic drama. And I would put this as a 2-hour series finale up there at least as good as something like the MASH 2 hours finale, which is the all-time highest rated television show in history. It was written in such a way that the viewers got to see the full emotional range that these actors were capable of. I've never disliked Jamie Bamber, but to really see him put through an emotional roller coaster in these 2 hours and 10 minutes, I was just supremely impressed with his ability. I mean, we already know Edward James Olmos and Mary McDowell are Oscar-nominated actors. In this episode, you get to see why. The writing was spot on. The acting was first class. I mean, not just Emmy nomination, but Oscar worthy. The show ends up being a morality tale, and it asks, is this the conclusion? Has the cycle been broken by what Battlestar Galactica does? But it does so in very religious overtones. You have two people that are essentially angels discussing God and his plan, and can you really know God's plan? So I guess that begs the question, is there too much God talk in a show like Battlestar Galactica?
As you know, I have absolutely no problem with God talk. I think there should be more of it. And when you take into consideration the fact that one of the original inspirations for the original Battlestar Galactica in 1978 was the tale of Exodus, the idea of the 12 tribes of Israel leaving Egypt to go find the Promised Land. In this case, you have the 12 tribes of Kobol leaving Caprica because they're being tormented by the Cylons to find the Promised Land of Earth. Very basic retelling of the biblical story, but instead of wandering through the desert, they're wandering through the stars. They also had a lot of religious ties to things. The Ship of Light was kind of a heaven-esque situation. They even had one conflict with the devil. So, religion has always been a part of Battlestar Galactica. The new Battlestar Galactica often took what tends to be more 21st century ideas of God and religion and church, which seems to be a bit more pessimistic, and that outlook seemed to show through throughout the series. Does God have a grand plan? Is God on our side? Oftentimes questioning, is there a God? And I don't know if I necessarily agree with all of their representations, but I think it's a good thing that people are still wondering and talking and thinking about the impact that a grand creator has on the universe and on society.
From my point of view, the most important thing that I got from that is science fiction and religion are not mutually exclusive entities. You can share the same arena. You don't have to say, because it happens in outer space, therefore these people are all atheists.
There are a lot of times that people say there is no religion in Star Trek because they want to put their own beliefs and ideals into this science fiction arena. Gene Roddenberry never said one way or the other in the Star Trek universe if they believed in a god or not.
It was left very vague. There was Star Trek V, The Search for God. That was kind of a silly little movie, but it said that there was an entity at least as powerful as God without actually talking about religion or dogma or anything like that. That was just an incredibly bad movie to begin with. I don't know that I can justify that in light of this discussion, but what Battlestar Galactica did is bring up a discussion without giving you the answers. It doesn't say, were they angels? It doesn't say, there is a God. It just basically asks you to ask those questions. Or more specifically, it asks you to answer the questions for yourself.
We've already given a small spoiler warning. This one is going to be a little bit bigger, so consider yourself warned. Through the entire series, Baltar has had this hallucination of Six, and he's gone everywhere from believing that it was a hallucination to a cybernetic implant to he himself being a Cylon. He never really knew who this Six that was in his head was. In Season 3, we learn that Six has a hallucination of Baltar. We never really understood what the concept was. Everybody kind of just assumed that Baltar was a little tut-tut-tut-tut-tut, but it was never really questioned. In the season finale, we learn that these entities are actually real, and it's through their eyes that we see what happens to the colonies after they've found our Earth, have populated it, and several thousands of years have passed to find themselves in modern-day Earth. All of the evidence points to the fact that these two entities are angels, or something.
I think the last scenes with Baltar and Caprica Six, in his redemption, that he finally has accepted the fact that this is not a hallucination, that this is an angel. I think he really believes that, and therefore is portraying to the audience that this is an angel. The fact that the hallucinations survive 150,000 years into modern-day society, I think reinforces that. But then there's a little line about the Caprica Six angel says something about not being able to devise God's plan. At which point, the Gaius Baltar angel says he doesn't like to be called that.
So you can interpret that any number of ways. They could be saying that, yes, there's an entity and he just doesn't happen to like the term God. You could look at it as, no, they're not really angels. Maybe they're batting for the other side. There are any number of possibilities.
Just as the discussion on religion is, they were leaving it up to the viewer to decide, what are these?
Those two were pretty straightforward, or at least as straightforward as those types of characters leaving those kinds of questions can be. But there was a third character who, through the entire fourth season, has had a big old question mark over her head, and that's Kara Thrace, Starbuck. She has found evidence that she was around 3,000 years ago on the original Earth, possibly even causing the destruction of that Earth. And one of the big question marks over her head is, what is she? She's not a Cylon, but she's more than human. She seems to have the answer for a lot of things. Once they get to Earth and settle down and start planting roots, she talks to Lee Adama about the fact that her job is done, and she doesn't have any more questions. She asks him what he's going to do now. He turns away to look at the landscape and talk about all of the exploring that he wants to do, turns back to look at her again, and she's gone. Nowhere in sight across this grand landscape, which, again, begs the question of, was she an angel as well?
I have my own opinion on that. The one concept that they never hit upon on the reimagining of Battlestar Galactica that they did in the original series were these crystal light ships and what were effectively in the original series angels. I think she is the reimagining of the crystal light ships and their inhabitants.
There's a part of me that actually wants to take it one step further in the fact that if you're willing to accept that Caprica Six and Baltar angels possibly weren't angels to begin with, but maybe, quote-unquote, batting for the other side, maybe she was the angel and they weren't.
I like that concept. Of course, as we discussed earlier, it's strictly speculation on our part, and it's not news.
We're theorizing. We mentioned earlier that this was a morality play. So going along with the theorizing, what is the moral of the story?
It's an age-old science fiction concept to respect technology and not to let your technological ability supersede your moral and ethical authority. Probably my favorite line from a fairly mediocre to bad movie actually is from Jurassic Park, when Jeffrey Goldblum says, "Just because we can't do a thing, does that mean we should do that thing?"
It was very interesting because during the modern day montage where they were showing all the robotic inventions that people have come up with in modern day, I saw the female robot that I literally just saw on the news the week before. And this is a robot that they created in Japan who looks, talks, and almost moves like a real human being. And they're marveling at the fact that this is such an advancement in science and how they would love to market this thing to take over mundane duties and jobs like cleaning the house and working in factories and things of that nature. And the fact that they've gotten so close to mimicking life, it just made this finale all the more poignant. And the fact that they were actually able to include a clip about that robot in the montage shows exactly how timely they were.
I have two comments on this. All of the robots they showed in the ending scenes of this movie are actual real robots that are available here on planet Earth in March of 2009. And I think that that scene is what Ronald Moore and David Icke were actually building to all 4 years. And as far as that robot goes itself, the female robot in Japan, that is like the cutting edge robot right now. I've also seen shows on like Nova about this robot. Essentially, the movement of the human body, the locomotion, your hand movements, all of that, they have mapped down perfect already. They can imitate all those, so you can't tell the difference. The two things right now that are really stumping robot scientists are, one, your nonverbal communication, your facial cues. There are so many muscles in the face and so many things that your face does, whether you're lying or telling the truth, whether you're blushing, that's almost impossible to get a robot at this point to do. And the other thing is the skin. I mean, if you look at the skin of that robot, although it's painted and it's got makeup like a woman might, it still doesn't look like skin. But my second point goes back to this is what Moore and Icke were really building to. And they had this 4-year story arc. They had a beginning of the story, a middle of a story, and an end. They knew exactly what they wanted to tell. Well, this storytelling is kind of a mixed media. We've got your book format. Books always will have a beginning, a middle, and end. Whether or not they're to be continued like the Wheel of Time series or not. The book itself is self-contained. So this show was self-contained. Is it better to have a show which is self-contained, which is its own entity itself, or to have an open, serialized television show?
That's one of the age-old questions of television. And to be frank, both are very useful tools. The serialized show is wonderful if you get to tell the entire story. If it starts out as a serialized show and gets canceled halfway through, you end up having fans who are just outraged by it. The original Battlestar Galactica is an excellent example. It's one of the reasons why people wanted to see Galactica 1980, because it was going to tell the end of the story. The whole story of Battlestar Galactica was these people trying to get to Earth. Galactica 1980 started out with them getting to Earth. Unfortunately, they started with the end of the story, and people quickly lost interest. But if you can tell the story the entire way through, and the fact that Battlestar Galactica had a beginning, it had a middle, and it had an end, and the fact that they decided that they were going to go for the end before they managed to drain their audience dry, before they managed to jump the shark, was an excellent choice on their part. Far too many times, shows and networks just keep on trying to milk it out, and milk it out, milk it out, until the fans have lost complete and utter interest, and then they say, okay, now that you have no more viewers, we'll cancel it. And no, don't worry about telling your ending. Or they'll say, okay, you've got no more viewers, go on ahead and tell your ending.
Which is at least an honorable way of dealing with that situation. And in a couple of cases, the standalone shows worked out, where the show has come back after they've jumped the shark. I can only think of, like, comedies off the top of my head. The final season of Seinfeld is critically acclaimed. The final season of Everyone Loves Ray is critically acclaimed. And those were shows that they wanted to cancel the show on top. But the network was like, you're on top. We need another season.
A few years ago, the WB was horrible about that. To the point where one of their shows, Seventh Heaven, ran its series finale. It said, this is the season finale, and the WB looked at their schedule and went, God, we've got nothing here to hold our audience. You guys are giving us another season. And they sat there and went, what? We already wrapped up our storylines. And they said, we don't care. We want another season out of you.
Yeah, the CW now is still doing that. And you look at a show like, technically, Smallville has not had a series finale yet. It's kind of at a place where, as a fan of that show, I'm ready for the series finale.
While the shows were not episodic, you could see episode number 7 of season 2 without having seen episodes 6, 5, and 4. You didn't have to watch them all in a row, but it was a show that had a beginning, it had a middle, it had an end about 4 years ago. And they just keep on bringing it back and bringing it back and bringing it back. And as you said, as a fan, I've been sitting here for a couple of years now going, would you just please shoot the horse and put it out of its misery? It's still a decent show, but it's nowhere near as good as it used to be.
For all intent and purposes, there's only two members of the original cast still with that show.
When you have a show that's called Smallville, and all of 3 minutes of the show actually takes place in Smallville at this stage, they've moved on. It's time to bury the horse.
They moved on from Smallville to Lois and Clark a long time ago. By far, this was not the first show to have overall story arcs. You can see this going as far back as the I Love Lucy show. And even though the show itself didn't have a beginning, middle, and end, it had arcs within the series. It had her pregnancy in season 2. It had a series of stories in Hollywood in season 4, and a trip to Europe in season 5. So they knew even then that this idea of having multiple stories with one theme was a good idea. I think what we're really talking about here is continuity, not just these story arcs. I mean, there is a show with its own internal continuity back in the 60s, The Fugitive. There were several episodes of the show which play specifically on the search for the one-armed man, but it was still a serialized show where every week was one solid story of Jack Kimble searching for the one-armed man and running from Inspector Gerard. This theme worked out so well that they did 5 seasons of The Incredible Hulk on the exact same premise. We haven't quite caught up to the overall story arc, but by the time you get to the 1980s, there's shows with these mini story arcs. You've got St. Elsewhere and you've got Hill Street Blues, which have individual characters telling their story arc. There may be in one show the beginning of one story arc, the middle of another story arc, and the ending of one story arc. So you may have A, B, and C stories throughout one serialized episode. But by the time we reach the modern era, you've got shows like Battlestar Galactica, which is self-contained in its 4-year story. You've got a show like Babylon 5. Again, not only is the whole 5 years one story arc, but each individual season tells its own story. Very much so like Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
And this way of storytelling has become more and more popular as time goes on. You've got shows like Lost that have an entire internal continuity, and a lot of times, if you don't catch one or two episodes, you may end up being lost because there may have been a crucial piece of information that was given in those episodes. Shows like 24, each season is one day, and major things happen in every single episode. There is no such thing as a throwaway episode.
And there's a lot of people out there willing to buy the DVD sets. I'm not saying this is a bad thing, but it comes down to, are the shows profitable? So when the show is not profitable, it gets canceled. When it is profitable, they want more. The DVD sales of Firefly, which was by no means a self-contained story arc, the DVD sales alone justified making a motion picture.
They knew that if they could get the same number of people into seats as bought the DVDs, they would make their money back. But if you revolve your plot around an ongoing story arc, sometimes it can bite you in the butt. Shows like Jericho and My Own Worst Enemy, both of these shows had that overall story arc. And when they got canceled, fans of these shows didn't know what was going to happen.
In fact, just this season, Eli Stone and Pushing Daisies were both canceled in the middle of story arcs. Bring it back to Battlestar Galactica. The series finale of the reimagined Battlestar Galactica is not the end of the story. Later on this fall, they're going to be doing another mini-series called The Plan. This is going to be essentially retold through the eyes of the Cylons. As far as this version of Battlestar Galactica is concerned, this is probably the end. The sets have all been taken down, and a lot of the props were sold at auction. So for this rendition, it's probably over.
But that doesn't mean that it's the end of telling stories in this universe. In April, they're going to pre-release the pilot for the spin-off show Caprica. Now, this is an interesting idea of marketing, and I don't know how good of an idea it is. It's interesting, but not necessarily good. They're releasing it on DVD in April of 2009. They're not actually going to show the pilot until sometime early 2010. And there's the question that I have of, is this going to actually hurt the ratings for the original show? I realize that they're doing it this way to build up enthusiasm and build up excitement for the new series. But if the people have seen the pilot 9 months or so before it ever hits television, are they really going to care anymore to watch it with the commercials?
There is, in the music industry, a big to-do over downloaded music. And the question is, does downloaded music decrease album sales or increase album sales? There's a lot of proof in both camps. The pro-downloading music side says that it actually increases your record sales because you're finding markets of people who would never have seen it before. And my thought is, marketing the DVD goes along with that camp. It's going to say, if you can pick up the Caprica DVD and watch it through Netflix or watch it from a Redbox or at Blockbuster Video, that video is going to get you to also see the television series. It's going to be so interesting to find this out, because on the other side of the equation, I know I paid to see Batman Begins and I paid to go see Dark Knight Returns, and I still bought the DVDs. I still cared to own those. So is the other way true? If I go out and I buy Caprica, am I going to maintain that interest and that enthusiasm enough to watch the television series?
Are people going to be interested in watching something on television that they've already seen on DVD 9 months earlier?
I want to say yes, they're going to want to see it, but that may be a little bit optimistic.
Plus, I'm kind of in the camp of, I'm not sure I want to pay good money, especially in this economy, for an unknown quantity. There's a part of me that just wants to wait the 9 months until it comes out on TV, watch it for free, and then if I really like it, I can go on out and buy it on DVD.
But wouldn't you be willing to pay a buck for a Redbox or for something through Netflix? For a dollar, I'd be willing to see it, for sure.
But then again, it comes back to the question of, okay, I've spent the dollar, I've seen it, do I really want to see it again when it comes out and they have commercials attached to it? I guess we'll know in 9 months. Which brings me to my second concern about Caprica. They've shown previews, they've done interviews, and it's quickly becoming clear to me that Caprica is not Battlestar Galactica. It's set in the same universe, but that and having characters named Adama are really the only things that they have in common.
In the truest sense, this is a prequel. This is going to tell the story of where the advanced thinking machines came from.
The show revolves around two families, the Adama family and the Greystoke family. Both of them suffer a huge tragedy, and the storyline revolves around the question of how do they cope with this tragedy? Through this will be the birth of the cybernetic artificial intelligence machines. But it's very clear that this takes place planetside, takes place in a society very, very similar to our own, very heavy on the science, light on the fiction.
The way I've read it described is this is going to be the first science fiction family drama. So it's set in an advanced society, similar to our own, for the science fiction aspect, but it's about these families. It's the drama that's going to drive this show.
To be honest, I'm very reserved about this show. I am, of course, going to give it a shot. I'll probably watch at least the first couple of episodes to really see whether I'm going to enjoy it or not. I want to walk into it with as much of an open mind as I can. But I haven't been overly impressed yet.
Can't be any worse than Flash Gordon.
Or 33.
My final thoughts on the series Battlestar Galactica. In my opinion, it was slow and stumbled out of the gate. By the time you got to the series finale, it made up for all that stumbling. And I have to say that I really enjoyed the ending of the series. I think it was worthwhile.
I agree that it stumbled out of the gate, really hit its stride through seasons 2 and 3. I had a problem with the second half of season 4. It became very dark and very gritty, and at times it was excruciating to watch. Not because it was bad storytelling, it was very good storytelling, but the characters got kicked down so much, I just didn't see any possible way that most of the characters would even survive to the series finale, let alone through the series finale. So I got extra enjoyment out of the series finale itself because, while it didn't have necessarily a happy ending, it had a worthwhile and well-thought-out ending. That all being said, we hope that you enjoyed the series as much as we did, if not more so, and we highly encourage you to drop us a line and give us your thoughts on the series finale.
As always, we encourage and request your feedback. You can please write Jim at twerponline.net. And please don't forget that Time Wall Electronic Recording Productions can be found on Facebook, MySpace, and Zynga.
Join us next time as we take a look at the Aragon book series in honor of the release of the new book of the series, Brisinger. Twerpcast is a production of Time Wall Electronic Recording Productions, copyright 2009.
My God, It's full of stars.